This is the Podmatic Podcast for December 16th, 2015. Pop that popcorn! What else would you do with it? It's the Podmatic...
I'm sitting on my tree.
Oh, you got me.
I put it in balls.
Regardless, it's the Podmatic picks for the best movies of the year. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mike.
Bill.
Jeremy.
It's the best movies of the year, or maybe the best TV of the year, or maybe the best online video of the year.
What?
That we saw this year, I mean. We're going to do our top three. We're all going to say our number three, and then we're all going to say our number...
Two.
No jokes.
We're all going to say our number one.
One.
Numero uno.
Eins.
We talk about movies a lot on this show.
We do?
Let's see what happens this time.
Who watches
movies? Number three.
Okay. Bill?
Before I begin my top three movies of the year, I want to read a quote from a screenwriter, Howard Rodman. You want to tell a story going forward that seems pretty continuously surprising, and going back seems inevitable. The three films I've chosen, when I went into the theater, I was expecting one thing, but I came out with my expectations totally off balance. So, starting at number three, The Gift, written and directed by actor Joel Edgerton, who also co-stars. The two principal actors are Jason Bateman and Rebecca Hall, and they are a young married couple who have just moved back to Los Angeles because of a job. The Jason Bateman character runs into his old high school chum, played by Joel Edgerton. The old schoolmate starts sending gifts, and the fun begins in this wonderfully twisty thriller. That's my number three, The Gift. Jeremy?
All right, my number three film is a movie I watched with my wife and son all alone in a big movie theater on a Sunday morning. And it is Inside Out, the cartoon movie. Now, I probably watched Toy Story like 800 times this year during sick days and snow days and stuff, and I enjoyed it fine. But the sort of the Randy Newman stuff sort of all throughout it sort of reminds me of what an old man thinks a kid might like, and even though he's isn't wrong necessarily, he's also not entirely right. And the best Pixar movie for me is like the opening 10 minutes of Up, where they get like
really?
The guys, because it's so sad.
Yeah, dude.
And like I cried and I saw it at a drive-in.
Yeah, man.
So, but I think maybe this movie is a close second. The main character is not the little girl Riley in the character, but rather her anthropomorphized emotions led by Joy, who is voiced by Amy Poehler. And, there's a trend, I think, in animated movies nowadays where they don't get voice actors per se always to play the parts. It's always like name celebrities, and that just doesn't always work for me. But I think here it is great. Louis Black plays Anger. Bill Hader is in it. Mindy Kaling, Phyllis Smith, who played Phyllis from The Office. They all round out the spectrum of Riley's emotions. And the film follows Riley as she grows from a baby into a young girl, and her family moves across the country, and emotions become a little bit more complex for her, and she sort of starts to move away from the things that once defined her. And if you don't cry when her imaginary friend Bing Bong helps Joy escape from the memory dump, then you're made of tougher stuff than me.
My eyes hurt, but I did not cry for a moment.
Well, and the abstract thought scene where they're moving through abstract thought.
That was amazing.
Absolutely.
I think that was the point where I was like, this is a great film.
Yeah, absolutely. It was incredible. I want to see it like slowed down and recut with Angelo Badalamenti soundtrack played on a loop and drink some cough syrup. And fun fact relating to that, Kyle MacLachlan voices Riley's dad in the film. So my number three is Inside Out. Check it out. Amanda?
Okay. I have to admit, I have not seen this film in its entirety yet.
Wow.
Whoa.
That is near Jesse levels.
I thought we went to Amanda, not Brian.
I know. Someone's got it. This is not my podcast. I'm not going to lie.
Last week, before we started recording, I said you were the best.
And then
we proceeded to talk about something the library didn't have. And now on your number three best of the list is a movie you didn't fit in.
I'm using up my best credit. So anyway.
Soon I'll rise to the top again.
So I did see the previews for it. I was in the theater. I'm going to throw my pen at you. Let me finish. So I don't remember what movie I was watching, but I remember seeing the previews, and I really wanted to see it, and I've been waiting for the library to get it. Plus a friend of mine did see it, and she loved it. And it may seem like an incongruous pick for me as a white girl from the Midwest, but I did used to work in the music industry. And so as you probably already figured out, I'm talking about Straight Out of Compton. It's a biographical film about the NWA, or the godfathers of West Coast gangster rap. And we're talking about guys like Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, and Ice Cube. Dre and Ice Cube worked as producers on the film, and it was a breakout hit over the summer. But since then, it's been embroiled in controversy because NWA's original manager, Jerry Heller, is suing everyone involved with the movie for defamation, copyright infringement, and contract violation for like $110 million because he doesn't have enough money yet. But
even though he's portrayed mostly positively?
He didn't have a say in it, so he wants money. Yeah. This is my shocked face, by the way. So the good news is that the library has just put the DVD on order, so you can get your hold on it today. We also have both the original album Straight Outta Compton on Hoopla and Dre's movie soundtrack, which was just called Compton, which you can listen to until the temper tantrums and money demands get resolved and your holds show up and I actually get to watch the movie. But I'm very excited to see this one.
How is music? You keep calling it Straight Out of Compton? Straight Out of Compton?
Outta.
How did you feel about
I'm sorry if my Midwest accent is confusing. Yeah.
I can hear the corn.
Yeah. When I said you might be surprised that I picked this, I was thinking I've had like a lot of people in the Midwest bought that record. It's all good.
Well,
Mac.
This one may be the trickiest one to rate. My number three. For a long time, it was a tie between It Follows and What We Do in the Shadows. But I don't think ties are allowed. I could just picture Brian, the rules lawyer, raising so many objections. Objection! Sustained. So,
I would say the one probably overarching rule is just let you guys say whatever you want and then hack it into pieces when we're done.
Oh, yeah. Right? Mike didn't talk this time. He has to number three.
These are rules fascist.
Okay. Anyway, so I'm going with What We Do in the Shadows is number three. It's a mockumentary about five vampire roommates in New Zealand. They all become friends with a mortal guy named Stu, who introduces them to 21st century life. The fish-out-of-water comedy trope can get kind of old, but here it works really, really well. It's one of the funniest comedies I've seen in a while. I can't look at a plate of spaghetti now without picturing one of the vampires trying to use his mesmerism to make Stu think it's a plate of worms. Look at the pischetti. It's not pischetti. It is gross worms. And then one of the other vampires tells the camera that, you know, he's a really big fan of the Lost Boys, which is where he stole it from. It's like, that was really funny, you know, much another movie. Anyway, good stuff. What have you got, Brian?
Whoa.
That was amazingly short. That's like the shortest you've ever talked about anything ever.
I'm going off the chain on number one. So
saving your time for later. Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'm probably...
I'll be less impressed then.
I didn't know it. If I didn't talk very long, you guys would be impressed. That hurts.
All right. I'm probably going to go off the rails on my number three pick. And my number three, I'm going to do the same thing I did with our other best of and other formats, which is I'm going to pick something that you can get for free legally on the internet.
It's a GIF.
Yes. And if you don't have, and if you don't have the internet at your house or on your gizmo, you can come to the library and we have the internet. My number three is Titan's Grave, The Ashes of Valkana.
Eons before Valkana heard her own name, she bore witness to beings not of this realm. These ancients planted the seeds of life on Valkana. And as that life grew and civilizations formed, the thirst for supremacy blossomed into war.
We are going to explore what is in between the covers of this book.
And when you fake throw your crystal and I throw the potion, bubbles explode everywhere.
Bubbles.
Bubbles.
Okay, I'm going to go to the dance floor and I'm going to make a dexterity check for awesome.
Okay, terrific.
Have no fear, my compatriots. Is that a real word? I don't know.
And I unleash the storm's fury.
Show me the face you make.
You get hit for 7 points of fire damage.
Stop, drop, and roll! Stop, drop, and roll!
Why is he doing this?
And we leap over it and charge in.
That's not what I'm going to do.
You sink an arrow right into this one guy. Yeah, okay.
I just shot him in the
freaking face.
I know, you sure did, which is why he's targeting you with a firebolt. She holds her hands up and the place falls instantly silent.
Except for Lem burps.
Yeah, I burp again.
He swings his mace at you. Uh-huh. Really?
You just rolling bad today?
Today.
Titans Great. Is this like about the football team that lives here in Nashville?
This sounds like an anime.
Ouch. No, it's not about the football team. It sounds like a fantasy movie, but what it really is online web series documenting one gaming group's campaign set in the fantasy world of Valkana, which has been described as a mix of the heavy metal comic book and Thundar the Barbarian.
Whoa.
But, so, well, that's one thing I like.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm going to probably sink it for both of you. The Game Master is Will Wheaton. He authored.
Is Felicia Day there, too?
I know.
Hooray!
Is Chris Hardwick a guest star?
Yeah.
Well, if Will and Felicia Day get all the money from the show.
Oh, even better.
So the Game Master is Will Wheaton. He authored both the adventure and the campaign setting of Valkana. The rule system they are using is the Adventure Game Engine published by Green Engine Publishing. Remember that. That's very important. I'm just kidding. It's not important at all. We can just say they're playing Dungeons & Dragons. So you get the drift. Longtime listeners know that figuring out how to portray the fun of role-playing games on film is a nut that I think no one has really figured out how to crack until now. That's why Titan's Grave is number 3 on my best of list. Not only do you see the real-life things that make game sessions great, all the interactions. You could also do a podcast with your friends. The communal storytelling, the improvisation, the joy, the body language, the side eye. But with Titan's Grave, you also get cutaways to simple but effective animations that actually put you in the story that the players are playing out in real time. Big caveat, or maybe a small one, I backed this show on Kickstarter. Oh. But I have evidence that my opinion is unbiased. When I watch a TV show with my partner, if she doesn't like it, she will immediately pull out her phone and begin to sigh audibly. We're watching what I want to watch tonight, and there's nothing you can do about it. But when we watch Titan's Grave, she was into it. She was laughing when you were supposed to laugh. When there was exciting moments, I would look over just to see if she was into it. Totally transfixed by the TV. She was into the story. She's not a gamer like me. So Will Wheaton is the game master, but the other players are Hank Green, Allison Hayslip, Yuri Rosenthal, and Laura Bailey. All of those folks are professional inner tube personalities, actors or voice actors, so they actually can role play their characters very well and be funny and witty and entertaining on camera. There are 10 episodes. They're all about an hour long. Wow. A lot of things get resolved like throughout the course of the campaign, but some things are unresolved, setting up a season 2, which has been announced, but no details yet. Now, if you listen to me talk this whole time and you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, did I say that out loud? I have no idea what the heck I'm talking about. There is an episode 0 that will explain what a role-playing game is. It's Dungeons & Dragons. So one thing that they didn't show on the show is all the work that the game master has to do to make the game great. I mean, the show is also an example of like how to run a good role-playing game. But I think newbies might get the false sense that you just buy some dice and some paper and there you go. And there's actually a significant amount of preparation that goes into pulling off a game like Titan's Grave. And that's the one thing that I think they left out, but they did everything really, really good.
I like the things that Will Wheaton makes, but not so much him. I think maybe is the.
I'm getting a little oversaturated with the whole like internet celebrity thing. It's like it seems like everything. Oh, Will Wheaton's in it. Well, of course he is.
Also, I would be curious to see compare that to Harmon Quest when Harmon Quest comes on next year sometime.
I will. Will Wheaton was a guest on Harmontown once, mm-hmm. and he didn't seem very happy to be there. So that's Dan Harmon's podcast. So Dan Harmon's going to have a show where they play a role-playing game, probably much like this. It'll probably be funnier because it'll probably be professional comedians playing.
I think so. And it's going to have animated cutaways too.
Oh,
very
cool.
Very similar.
Show derailed. Number 2.
Number two.
Coming in at number 2 is Ex Machina. Is an intelligent science fiction film, thought-provoking, written and directed by Alex Garland. I must have liked this movie. I went to see it in the theater twice. Ooh. It stars Alicia Vikander, Tom Hall Gleason, Oscar Isaac. Basically, you have Cable, a programmer at Blue Book, the world's most popular search engine, and he wins a one-week visit to the secluded home of the CEO of Blue Book, Nathan. While there, Caleb discovers that Nathan has built a humanoid robot named Ava. This movie touches on so many topics such as objectification of women, privacy, and dependency on machines on everyday life. I highly recommend Ex Machina. Jeremy?
We haven't mentioned it on a podcast yet, but I want to say that I hope that my 2.5 is Star Wars. I want to like that movie. But speaking of science fiction, my number two favorite film is Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief, because nonfiction is often better than fiction, and because sometimes the best nonfiction is actually about fiction. That made sense when I wrote it. I've been fascinated by Scientology for particularly its origins for a really long time. And I've read a few books in the last several years, and I really enjoyed Lawrence Wright's 2013 book, Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief. And this movie basically is the film version of the book. It features interviews with many former Scientologists, most notably Oscar-winning writer and director Paul Haggis, who left the church after learning of its affiliation with anti-gay groups in California, and talks to them about their time with the religion. The book was sort of came out of an article that was in The New Yorker written by Lawrence Wright called The Apostate, and it was sort of about Paul Haggis leaving the church, and then it kind of went from there. So the movie, there's tons of archival footage of L. Ron Hubbard sort of at the beginning of Dianetics and sort of throughout the early years of Scientology and stuff.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Yeah. Yeah. The film sort of exists in two halves for me. There's the weird, paranoid, probably, maybe, but maybe not, ultimately harmless time of Dianetics era Scientology, when Hubbard was sort of getting all this going and making a lot of money and doing weird stuff and sailing out to sea and searching for treasures that he buried in a past life and stuff. And then after he died, there was this weird sort of coup that happened when the current church leader, David Miscavige, took over the church. And then that's when you sort of get all the information or all the accusations of abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, people dying and stuff. And so the movie sort of has this sort of like lighthearted, whimsical weirdness at the beginning of it of like these people are seekers, and this sort of comes out of the sort of pre-60s spirituality movement. And then there's the sort of like dark 80s like puppet master control mind head.
You're
cult.
Talking about Ex Machina, right?
Yes. Hi-yo! It sort of seems like two different organizations in the film, but both are what non-members like myself would likely call weird. But and the church didn't participate in this film at all, except for to sort of issue a press statement refuting every claim.
So basically, they said nuh-uh.
Yeah, basically. And but the sort of later era, the second half of the film has like this weird cult sort of fascist thing to it that is really creepy and very intriguing. So my number two is Going Clear. Amanda?
I'm going to change tracks just a little bit.
All right. Shift those gears.
My favorite number two movie was Pixels. And this movie was horrendously close to being my absolute favorite of the year. My husband and I watched it one night. And as soon as it was over, he wanted to go back to the beginning and watch it again. And I really wanted to, too, but it was already midnight and I was tired, so we just waited till the next day. So the basic premise of the movie, in the 1980s, we sent a capsule up into space containing video games, and the alien race that intercepted this took it as a challenge. So now, 30 years later, the aliens have created these classic video games and have attacked Earth. And scarily, it's up to Adam Sandler, Peter Dinklage, and President Kevin James to save the world as, finger quotes, the Arcaders. Yeah, President Kevin James. Yeah. Who thought I would have ever said that?
Yeah.
So
a
it's
dark universe indeed.
It's very much kind of like Ready Player One meets Independence Day, and it's kind of what I wanted Ernest Cline's newest book, Armada, to be. Now, the library does have the DVD, but there's a very long hold list on it. So we have a trade secret for our podcast listeners. If you go to the Southeast branch, they have a magic DVD vending machine, kind of like Redbox,
mm-hmm.
that you might be able to get a copy, because those are not holdable and people can't put holds on them ahead of time. So if you go there, you might get lucky, kind of like Lucky Day books, but for DVD. So.
Kind of like a Redbox, but more like a snack machine you'd find in a work break room.
Yeah, I haven't physically used it myself, but no money.
The nickname is the candy machine.
The candy machine.
It looks like a candy machine.
So it's like a candy machine.
Or the thing where only copies of things go and we can't put them on hold for people.
Don't criticize the library or the podcast.
Hey, it's going to hit me next week.
Oh, guess who's been withdrawn from the podcast permanently.
I've been suppressed. I really wanted to see that movie. I really like the premise of it.
Yeah, I think your son would like it too.
It got a lot of bad reviews, but like I still...
People bad review because it's Adam Sandler. Yeah, I stopped there.
I was really into it until I saw Adam Sandler was in it, and I was like, nope.
I love Adam Sandler. I'm sorry. I'm in.
I don't love Adam Sandler past The Wedding Singer, but except for like Punch Drunk Love. But I like all that in SNL. Adam Sandler so much that I still... And I like funny people, too.
This one's back to, like, old school Adam Sandler.
Don't forget
he's not
Airheads.
Trying to be.
Oh, Airheads.
I love Airheads.
I
love Airheads.
I hate funny
Interesting
who would win in a fight?
On the podcast.
Who would win in a fight, Lemmy or God?
Trick question. Lemmy is God.
Yeah. Johnny can't read. Johnny can't write.
Amanda.
Yes?
Were you just talking about pixels?
I'm done.
All right.
Yeah, I was just letting him.
Mike.
I still haven't read a whole book yet by David Foster Wallace, but that doesn't stop me from nominating The End of the Tour.
Should we pause so Brian can mock you a little bit for that?
As I recall, he didn't like Infinite Jest, so maybe...
Oh, that's okay.
You're an idiot. You're an idiot.
I like Bill
Kingsley. You're an idiot.
It'd be hard for me to disagree that David Foster Wallace is a genius. I think he is probably a genius. I just didn't like that really horrible long book he wrote.
Hi-oh!
Oh, yeah, you know, since I watched this movie, it's like I keep meaning to read it, and then it's like a brick of a book.
Really great book I like that makes fun of that book a lot is Chronic City by Jonathan Latham. There's a really good mocking of Infinite Jest in that book.
Every character wears a bandana.
I digress.
but back to acting.
Anyway, it's based on a book called Although, Of Course, You End Up Becoming Yourself by David Lipsky, which we also have, which details Lipsky following Wallace around on the last stop of his Infinite Jest book tour. They talk about everything from American culture and extreme loneliness to what is the best junk food. But Mike, you're saying your number one complaint with movies is that you're too talky. And The End of the Tour is nothing but talking. Meh. Well, hypothetical podcast fan who may or may not be from Perth, if every talky movie was like this, then I would not complain so much. I like that they admire and yet are jealous of each other. And it's really subtle, too. I like that there's no voiceover telling you exactly what each person is thinking, which, you know. It wasn't until afterwards it's like, were they really friends? You know, did he really like him? I couldn't, you know, I need to watch that again. It's really sad. It's also really funny. And the experience of the film was a lot of fun. My girlfriend and I went to the first screening at the Beaucourt where the author of the book was talking on Skype. It was really cool. We got some, like, behind the scenes and, you know, like, did he like Jesse Eisenberg playing him and that kind of thing. That was a lot of fun, so.
I'd rather have Matthew McConaughey play me.
All right.
All right. I'll see you. All right, team.
I'd rather have Matthew McConaughey...
Moving on. So, that's a good setup. My number two movie is set in outer space and stars Matt Damon. Of course, I'm talking about...
The Martian?
Interstellar!
Oh, what? Didn't that movie come out last year?
Much like The Peripheral.
Did you see it last year?
Much like The Peripheral, I caught this movie right at the end of 2014.
Oh.
And I didn't get a chance to talk about it on the show. And if you got it on DVD at the library, you probably watched it in 2015.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's Interstellar about? The Earth is dying, and surely there's an aging hunk of alpha male rocket man, Matthew McConaughey, pretending to be a farmer somewhere in the Midwest that can find a wormhole to save us, right? Surely there is! Just as surely he can't do this alone, he needs help of two beauty queen scientists. One stays on Earth, Jessica Chastain, and the other goes to the rocket with him, Anne Hathaway. And of course, there is one black astronaut, David Gayassi, but he dies! America! This movie is big and dumb, and I loved every minute of it.
Sorry, Brian's the best Brian.
Okay. It also features really great retro futurist robots.
Robots.
Those are super magical.
They're robots. They have appears for you.
Robots down. Hey, bro.
Really great retro futurist robots. 2015 was a good year for robot movies. It has alien worlds that actually look like alien worlds as opposed to Prometheus, whose alien worlds look like a video game. The only bad things about this movie are Matt Damon and the fact Space Vortex was the color of baby poop. But hey, it's Vortex. Things are moving really fast. Maybe that's what it looks like. I don't know. I like when artists stretch themselves and take aesthetic risks. You know, I think that's what everyone involved in Interstellar was trying to do, but it was like stretching towards grandiosity, and I can appreciate that. Go big or go home. Of course, I also love that it features a hacked Dell computer controlling Rocket Man's farm combines. A link to a video of a real-life guy doing just that.
Ugh.
The Popmatic podcast is made on
a hacked
Dell PC using open source software. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And my number one pick, I promise, will be something completely different.
Number one.
Numero uno.
Number one.
For me, it was Sicario, written by Taylor Sheridan, directed by Denise Villeneuve. And is an action film that dares to have complex characterization and a wonderful sense of moral ambiguity. An idealistic FBI agent played with gusto by Emily Blunt finds her moral compass tested in the drug wars with a Mexican cartel.
State Department is pulling an agent that specializes in responding to escalated cartel activity.
This is not my department. FBI!
You want to be a part of this?
Do we get an opportunity at the men responsible for today?
The men who are really responsible for today.
Ever been to Juarez before?
We're going to El Paso, right? You're not American.
No.
What do you work for now?
Well, I go where I'm sent.
Every day across that border, people are killed with his blessing. To find him would be like discovering a vaccine.
Nothing will make sense to your American ears.
But in the end, you will understand.
Spotter vehicle, left lane.
Spotter vehicle, 9 o'clock.
Get your weapon out.
I'm not a soldier. This is not what I do.
Juarez is what happens when they dig in. This is it.
Gotta be careful around these people. CIA is not supposed to work this side of the fence.
I just want to know what I'm getting into.
They will not survive here.
You use me as bait.
Freeze!
You saw things you shouldn't have seen.
It works for my composition.
Providing a measure of order that we could control.
I'm gonna tell everyone what you did.
That would be a major mistake.
The movie also stars Josh Brolin, Benicio del Toro, Victor Garber, photographed with brilliance, as usual, by Roger Deakins. And I never knew where this movie was going, and I loved every minute of it. All three of the movies I've chosen were well-written adult entertainments. They took genre filmmaking, the thriller, the science fiction movie, and the action movie, and subverted genre filmmaking. So, Jeremy.
All right.
Well, 2015 was the year that I stepped into the streaming world, and so...
Welcome.
Thanks.
Welcome to 2008.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I'm not an early adopter. How many times have you had to re-update your stuff?
None, he says, with confidence. I sold the hard drive of my whatever, and then I played Call of Duty, et cetera, et cetera.
Your critique of gamer culture is spot on.
Yeah. I'm not an early adopter. I didn't get a cell phone until 2010. So
Wow, yeah, man.
There you go.
Dude. Now you can watch movies on your cell phone.
Yes, exactly.
It's magic.
My grandfather had a cell phone before that.
It's not that I was unable to. I just did not want one.
Do you want me to keep pretending your self-loathing is an admirable quality?
That's not or self-loathing. That's
I can't tell if he's humble or humble brag.
Yeah, that is a point of pride for me.
I would just send telegraphs to my wife saying that I'm okay, stop.
I got one because
life at the library is pretty cool, stop. I can't tell the smell.
I got
one
because she was.
I got it because she was pregnant.
Would you like milk? Stop.
I bought this entire industrial bale of wire, so when I drive to work, I can talk to you through this tin can. That's how much I love you.
Wow. Wow.
Smells like chicken soup.
Wow. Meanwhile, you guys are like, oh God, my dad's calling again. Oh God, screw you guys.
I'm sorry, what movie did you watch?
This
is tied in with the movie, right?
So, yes. Okay. So because of this, like, I ended up watching a lot of things that I heard about but had previously been unable to see because I couldn't get to the theater. Yeah, well, I've only watched 4 episodes still. Because I didn't get to the theater to see it, or because it was on Netflix and I didn't have Netflix, but now I do. And so one Saturday, a sick day, I spent a beautiful couple of hours watching Call Me Lucky, a documentary about comedian Barry Crimmins, and it's directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, and it is excellent. Near the beginning of this documentary about Crimmins' life, he's a comedian, a satirist, an activist, a very prominent mustache man. Barry Crimmins says his goals in life are to overthrow the United States government and close the Catholic Church. And from there, the movie only gets darker and funnier.
Well, there's a couple of things I have to accomplish, and if I do, I think I'll be able to put my little tile in the grand mosaic of life. And those two things are, I'd like to overthrow the government of the United States, and I'd like to close the Catholic Church.
Barry Crimmins was this weird mythical force.
He'd spawn all of these great humorists.
Paula Poundstone.
Lanny, Kevin Meaney, Dennis Leary.
He was a guy who you heard about before you actually saw him.
This whispered about presence.
I never met anyone like him.
He's just this combination of Noam Chomsky and Bluto.
I got caught smuggling books into Kentucky.
Got off on a technicality no one could prove they were books.
Why do women go to the bathroom in pairs? Because they get hassled by drunk men.
He would go into a rage.
Watch the kind of stuff I can do here.
Just get out. I don't like you.
He stopped, I think, worrying about whether he was being funny or not.
There was a lot of personal things that happened in his life when he was young that came out later.
It was the most shocking thing, I think, in my life that I heard.
It's scary for anybody of any age to really see someone who's the face of evil.
When AOL was in its infancy, he was looking for other survivors in chat rooms.
Barry called me up. He said, look at this. And I went, wow, I couldn't believe, you know, what I was seeing.
I just can't imagine pretending to be one of these people that caused him such misery.
He was angry.
He essentially left us with a big problem.
He damaged himself to save these kids.
After months of knocking on AOL's door, I was suddenly face to face before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee.
AOL is the key link in a network of child pornography traffickers.
They weren't quite sure what to make of Barry.
We cannot surrender being rude, funny, obnoxious truth tellers.
I can't think of anybody that I respect more than Barry. He's a reminder that you do have power.
No matter what they do, I'm a witness to what you can go on to become. Call me lucky.
And by the end, there's like a throw your fist in the air, sort of rallying cry of overthrowing the government and stuff. Crimmins was was the catalyst for the Boston comedy scene in the 1980s, and he sort of gave breaks to Stephen Wright, Paula Poundstone, Bobcat Goldthwait, who directed the film, Tom Kenny, who was Bobcat's comedy partner and also voices SpongeBob SquarePants and Adventure Time's Ice King, and many, many other people. And sort of aside from his impact on comedy, Crimmins has worked in the realm of social justice, most notably testifying before Congress in a hearing about AOL's complicity and the spread of online child pornography. And then this sort of plays a big role in the film. Crimmins' own history of abuse is sort of the emotional core of the movie, and his survival of that is sort of what makes it inspiring and just a really, really great documentary. So I got two documentaries on my list, and this one is really great. Call me lucky. Amanda?
I have zero documentaries on my list. Which is weird because I read a lot of nonfiction books, but my movies are all stories. So I've already mentioned my favorite movie of the year, Tickle My Fancy, back in October. I saw The Intern with my mother-in-law in Florida, and this time I was the one who wanted to stay and watch it again.
Okay, Benjamin, I'm going to ask you one of our more telling questions for all of our interns, so I want you to, like, this is the one to really think about, okay? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
When I'm 80.
And I love myself! The world is a ghetto.
Remember a few weeks ago we talked about the senior intern program?
Seniors in high school or college?
No. Seniors in life.
Hold on, what?
That's our founder and CEO, Jules Austin.
Any tips before I go in?
Blink.
Blink.
She hates when people don't blink, it weirds her out.
Hi, Jules. I'm Ben, your new intern.
I'm glad you also see the humor in this.
It'd be hard not to.
I will email you when I have something for you to do.
I'll wait to hear from you, sir. I'm terribly sorry. Excuse me.
So you're Jules' new driver?
No, actually, I'm her intern.
That's hysterical.
My internship keeps busy.
Mr. Congeniality. Everybody loves him.
You should dress to impress. Tuck in the shirt. Why doesn't anybody tuck anything in anymore? Oh, I'm asking you.
I'm Fiona, the house masseuse.
Ben.
How's that been?
Well, oh boy.
Here you go.
You're not as old as I thought you were.
So you're on Facebook, huh?
I joined about 10 minutes ago.
Well, better late than never.
All right, so there are all these questions for your profile that you can answer if you want to. Like, people who inspire you.
Jules Austin. You do inspire Jules.
Our investors just think that a seasoned CEO could take some things off your plate.
I mean, give me CEO lessons.
I never had anything like this in my life. This big, beautiful, exciting thing that you created.
Remember who did that?
Oh. Good times.
It's moments like this when you need someone you know you can count on. Because you're my
intern.
Well, I was gonna say intern / best friend.
Look and learn, boys, because this is what cool is. How in one generation have men gone from guys like Jack Nicholson and Harrison Ford to...
Oh boy.
The movie stars Anne Hathaway, because apparently she's our actress of the day, as a savvy online entrepreneur, and Robert De Niro as her, finger quotes, senior intern. I like both of these actors, but I think my favorite part was that it was written and directed by Nancy Meyers, who I really, really love. If her name sounds familiar, she also wrote The Holiday and Something's Gotta Give, as well as The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan, which is still good no matter how much you hate Lohan. And she also wrote Father of the Bride, the remakes with Steve Martin. At this point, I'll pretty much watch anything she does. The library does not have it yet. And here, I'll pause for Brian to punch me. But it's
not the whole fist.
It's because it's not out on DVD yet. It's not.
Yeah, we'll get that for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get several copies. But while you're waiting, we do have copies of the other ones I mentioned. And The Intern hit theaters at the end of September. So if you have a dollar theater in your area, it might still be there. And if it is, run, don't walk. But make sure you bring a Kleenex or two, Matt.
All right.
I was just saying, that's the only girl movie so far that anybody has talked about.
Inside Out has a girl.
That's true.
Inside Out is pretty girly.
What do you mean? Sirocco's got the lead as a girl.
I would argue.
But I mean, it's like chick flick. I can't say I would call Sirocco.
And Ex Machina is about.
I would say Ex Machina is a girl movie, too.
Like a chick flick movie, though? Like you drag your boyfriend to on a date?
Rom-com?
Not exactly a rom-com.
I think he would go willingly.
It was
robot nudity in Ex Machina, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to miss that.
That's totally for the girls.
Exactly.
Totally necessary to the plot.
It actually is. And I will say that... the one thing I would thought about Ex Machina, I don't really think it's a science fiction film. It's a noir.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can see that.
It's totally this old school noir where this badass chick is showing these boys the door. Yeah. No pun intended.
I thought about that when I saw the movie, too.
Yeah.
It's a good observation.
If I watch this movie and, like, the first line is like, I really got to find this door, I'm pissed. I'd be so pissed.
Dang it, they told me there was a door.
The door!
They're walking through a door?
Oh, she shows him the door. He doesn't even find it himself.
Have you heard about our door?
It's interesting. There are doors in this movie.
Wait, is Jim Morrison in this movie?
There are doors in my movie, too.
And the door's...
That's such a spoiler.
You mean the end? This is the end, beautiful friend, Mike. The end.
So anyway, gang.
Walk on down the hall.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, for me, there are two kinds of five-star to five-star movies. The first kind is where my mind is blown. There's before Mike and after Mike. I have to use my hands to raise up my jaw so drool doesn't pool on my clothing. I need to get in a trash can man van and follow anyone who's ever worked in the film around and scream, "My life for you!" at them. "My life for you!"
Wow. Cibola!
"I love you!" But for the past 5 years, there have been...
That's just totally for us. I usually understand too, but that's ridiculous.
Brian's gonna... The levels have been exploding on the mic.
Yep.
For the past 5 years, there have only been one or two movies a year that have gotten the second kind of five-star for me. The second kind is more like a grain of sand that gets inside an oyster and becomes a shiny pearl. It's quiet. It is subtle. I think about it a lot, but it excites me at first. It's kind of meh. And then nuts of me. A gradual kind of falling in love. I began to get worried I couldn't get excited about movies anymore. Maybe I'm getting old and I've seen everything. Maybe I've become my parents, or even worse.
Paul Harvey.
I was going to say Brian.
Oh. Good day. I was going to say Paul Harvey. No one knows who Paul Harvey is.
My grandma knows Paul Harvey.
Okay. We all know who Paul Harvey
is. It's longer. Let's
go. Yeah. I'm on a roll here.
Sorry.
But then a little movie from Australia came out earlier this year and made my mind explode with delight. Its name, Mad Max Fury Road.
Da-da!
In this wasteland, I am the one who runs from both the living and the dead. A man reduced to a single instinct. Survive.
We are not things. We are not things.
Where is she taking them? I want them back. They're my property.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day!
Want to get through this?
Let's go!
As the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken. It was hard to know who was more crazy. Me, or everyone else.
Unlike the other movies I mentioned today, I did not recommend it on the podcast, for I assumed, like me, everyone on the podcast would be spraying chrome in their mouths the weekend it came out and screaming, "Witness me!" But alas, it was just me. I think Bill actively disliked it, so I didn't think it was cool to mention it much. Until now! Haha. The plot, who cares?
I think that was the plot.
Yeah, that was the plot. That was what the writer said.
Get in the truck.
Can't throw my slob truck now. You just pulled that rug out from under me.
The plot.
Okay. That's
two in a row we've had that have been like, "What's dumb?" and I loved it.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly how I feel about Interstellar, man.
Oh,
does it make any sense? Good.
It's the best. I mean, you know, you've seen it. You loved it. You made internet memes. You see, like, people make it out of hieroglyphics and just weird stuff. Anyway, but in case you lived under a rock or have no taste or, you know, whatever, Max Rockatansky, the titular Mad Max, helps Imperator Furiosa, Muggle women who are treated as nothing more than breeding cattle, to a promised land called the Greed Place. Wow. But there's bone-crunching violence, and with a soupçon, a mid-taste, a deeper stuff. Why, I've read some really interesting essays online that have analyzed it from both a pro- and anti-feminist perspective, as well as a socialist and capitalist perspective. The side of my brain that likes sneaky stuff, and the side of my brain that likes bone-crunching violence and fight choreography can finally have a happy dance together. We could be friends, as opposed to mortal enemies with the rest of the year. We got Brian.
All right, yeah. Yes, yeah.
You said,
I remember you saying you're not a fan.
I wasn't a fan. That's true. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I just thought, sort of had that, for me, been there, done that. Yeah. And I just loved The Road Warrior. And so, you know, I wish they could just kind of re-release that, because that's the one I got.
It was like The Road Warrior turned up to 12.
Yeah. Yeah. It was way more exciting to me to The Road Warrior. Just, you know, I mean, I like
that. I mean, there were some spectacular things into it, but I mean... It's just like he's just repeating himself.
I wish I'd seen it in the theater, because I didn't see it in the theater, yes. And I watched it at home.
My girlfriend and I saw it 3 times in the theater, once in IMAX 3D.
Yeah, oh,
it was, really?
My wife.
I went to see an RPX.
Oh,
it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
My wife the whole time was like, IMAX. What?
Yeah, it was like
She kept freaking out. It was awesome. It was great.
Witness me.
Listen, Circus Olay with monster trucks. There you go. That's
So
that's
see? That's the best part of the movie. With the,
That's great.
I want to think about Ninetales. Those weird stilt people. Like I want.
That was amazing.
Like, and it was like 3 seconds of the movie. I want more of that.
Or was it one of the bad guys, like, he becomes blind, and he's like, I am the arbiter of justice! I will not be contained! He starts, like, shooting guns for no reason, and, like, it has the Verdi's Requiem in the background, one of my favorite classical, like, music bits. For no reason, I'm like, this is amazing! More of this, please. Anyway, so...
Now for something completely different.
Oh, boy. What downer do you have, Brian?
I don't know. Arguably, this is a feminist movie, the same as Mad Max Fury Road. So I've gamed the system so far and talked about role-playing games and open-source software... But my number one pick, I promise, this time is actually going to be a movie, just about the movie, none of this tangential stuff. My number one movie of the year is Felt, which I saw at the Nashville Film Festival, but you can get it at the library now on DVD. In Felt, we meet a somewhat disaffected artist named Amy, played by Amy Everson. She blurs the line between art and real life by making masks and outfits out of what?
Felt,
and other stuff too, but like felt.
And glitter?
Mark Felt. Yeah.
It quickly becomes apparent that Amy has been traumatized in some way, and the masks are her way of, like, coping. They're like a coping mechanism for her. She relies more and more on her masks as an escape. She becomes disassociated from her family and friends. She starts to put on outfits and engage in, like, borderline antisocial behavior, like out in public. Yeah, this is a movie for me. During one of her art pranks, though, she meets a boy, Kenny, played by Ken Tucker Audley. Yes, that's his real name.
Sure.
Kenny becomes Amy's lifeline and maybe the only thing that's really keeping her mentally together. Like I said, her behavior is getting more borderline. But what will happen if Kenny betrays her? I won't tell you what will happen, but I will tell you that Felt it has been mostly marketed as a horror movie. Is it a horror movie? Not really, but it almost is. It sort of hovers in this liminal space between normalcy and horror. It's very disconcerting. In a lot of ways, it's the opposite of Interstellar. A lot of the art pranks that Amy does in the movie were, like, done for real, and they were filmed guerrilla style. And a lot of the interaction between Amy and Kenny was, like, semi-improvised. Like, the director, Justin Banker, would just film it. So Felt is a small, intimate movie that was obviously shot on a shoestring budget, but it is no less beautiful than a movie like Interstellar. The director, Justin Banker, actually trained as a cinematographer before becoming a director, and it shows, like, what he does in this movie is so good. Felt, if you forgive the pun, is very affecting. The movie has a very strong social message, and it will rip your heart out, and you know I require that, or cut your genitals off, spoiler alert, as the case may be. I was very privileged to see this movie at the Nashville Film Festival, where Everson won Best Actress in the Graveyard Shift competition. Now you can see it on DVD at the library because the library is awesome. Felt. Hey, guys. what do we do on Tickle My Fancy besides leave me hanging here?
What?
Well, the library has it, and maybe the library does it. But either way, it's tickling my fancy.
Thanks, Aquaman.
I tried to do it at the same time.
Amanda?
Well, I just wanted to mention that if you do not have enough Christmas music in your life, I will be doing my usual Christmas concert here at the library on December 21st. That's a Monday. It'll be at noon. So if you're downtown, you can take your lunch break and come hear some good Christmas music. If you can't do it that day, the day before, December, Sunday the 20th at 2 p.m., I'll be at Belmont United Methodist Church playing there as well. So come down, hear some good Christmas music. Some of it's really hard, so I don't have to go home and practice, but it's fun.
Well, I think like last year, I'll do a list of some movies that didn't quite make the cut in my top
Brian
three.
Loves me to do that.
Just to annoy Brian, some of these we have, some of these we don't. I guess he can leave
but
off the
way,
ones that we
don't. Tickle your fancy.
They tickled my fancy enough for me to mention it again. I'll leave out the ones that were mentioned previously on this podcast. And, you know, there won't be a lot. I also like to throw out recommendations to A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yeah.
The best Iranian spaghetti western noir movie ever made. The Creeping Garden about slime mold. I had no idea that slime mold was neither animal nor vegetable. It was a very interesting book.
It's slime.
Steve Jobs.
Fungus, right?
With Michael Fassbender, a very interesting movie that not only talks about Steve Jobs, but also about, like, you know, friendship and parenthood. It's a really interesting, like, you know, I need to watch it again.
He's a real nice guy.
Yeah. The nicest. The Nightmare, about sleep paralysis disorder, which is amazing, yeah, and kind of explains why alien abductions and assorted weird stuff that happens to people.
I gotta see that.
You
gotta see
my that. My succubus was real.
Ooh,
Did you marry
him? I loved Room 237.
Yeah, I totally did.
And last but not least, Searching for General Zhou, a movie about my favorite Chinese food dish and Chinese food in general. But it was kind of exciting. I didn't know that General Tso's chicken is the most popular Chinese food dish in the country.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know.
It is as Chinese as this podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Although
it originally comes from Taiwan. What do you got, Bill?
Tickling My Fancy is a book on CD I listen to. It's not great literature. It's just simply called But Enough About Me. It's by Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds reads it.
Oh, must be Burt Reynolds or
Burt
something.
Burt Reynolds reads it?
Burt Reynolds reads it.
Burt Reynolds reads it.
The thing about it is he's kind of in bad shape now from all the years of stunt work. But at first, it's kind of like, I wish they'd gotten another reader. But as you go on, he puts a lot of emotion in the story, especially when he starts talking about Dinah Shore and Dom DeLuise. And also the nice thing about it is it's just not all gossip. He's talking about people he's met. And also he talks about, if you like films, he talks about working with Robert Aldrich, who directed him in The Longest Yard, and about the making of Deliverance. So there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. It was just a nice book to have when going back and forth to work. So I highly recommend it. Be a great trip book, too. And Jeremy,
yeah,
Tickling Your Fancy.
Tickling My Fancy is a book called Mega Hex by Simon Hanselman. This is from Fantagraphics Books. It's a comic book drawn by Hanselman, is, I think, from Tasmania, lives in Australia. And the book is about a witch, a cat, an owl, a wolfman, and a wizard. And they drink and do a lot of drugs and break into places and make out. And it's hilarious. Also, I read the Archie versus Predator, and it was just okay. But I'm glad that it exists.
Corrections! Y'all got corrections?
I had a few.
You
go for it. Everybody's like,
I wasn't here, but
apparently there are a couple of bands named Ho Chi Minh. I got two emails about this from two different people.
Yep.
That's what I get for making an off-the-cuff remark. I guess I'll change the name of my All Melodicon quartet from Ho Chi Minh to Sukarno.
There was an in-show correction got corrected where you called rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Jesse called him on there.
Yes, that's good.
And I couldn't make room for it in the podcast proper today, but the documentary alluded to that made salty water run down my face was Last Days in Vietnam, an Oscar-nominated documentary about the fall of South Vietnam. I had kind of assumed that North Vietnam rolled down to the South in a matter of days, a little bloodshed. Boy, was I wrong. Stupid feelings. I hadn't cried in over a year.
Oh, I also wanted to say, it's not a correction, but I wanted to say that there can be no true victor in the battle over musical taste, but I can say with complete confidence that history is on my side because Sabaton. I think in the graveyard of I'm the graveyard of empires. So the more you keep invading me and attacking me through my Elvis Costello, the more you will just continue to fall and
lose your resources. We can put you back in.
Blooded treasures.
Fine, I'll go back to reading music criticism and, you know, all the.
All I'm gonna say about this little debate is that. Sabaton
is my favorite band ever.
There was a lot about Sabaton in the write up for the episode, but I took it all out. All right.
There's a saying that David Lee Roth said, it's like, critics like Elvis Costello, man, because critics look like Elvis Costello, man. It's not a good David Lee Roth impression.
It doesn't sound like David
Ask
Lee
Ask Jason but... in circulation, he can do it.
All right.
The end.
All right.
Thank you.
Panama. Wow. Yeah, Mike's back to singing.
We didn't sing last week on the episode.
I'd rather sing during the music episode.
I'd rather have Sabaton than David Lee Roth, but probably rather have Van Halen than Sabaton. Okay.
Yeah, that's an important distinction.
One more correction. Sure. Though we often invite Sarah on our music episodes, the last episode she was on was the September 16th Astama Saki episode, not the CMA Fest episode where I mentioned Sewer Goddess. I apologize to Sarah for associating her with Sewer Goddess.
Also, you were saying Tanya Tucker's name correctly. Someone said that you were not saying
it. Yeah, Mike called him
myself. Oh, what? Her name really is Tanya.
It's Tanya. Yeah. It's
you
Tanya.
Really call her Tanya.
Her name is Tanya Tucker.
Wow,
I guess
I've
never.
Are you questioning my Tanya fandom?
Yes. Especially after comments we had after the episode was recorded.
Let's.
We will not allude to those.
Tanya dumb?
Let's move on. And then not a correction, but an omission. The name of the Arca track that I gave the sample of was called Vanity. There's a video for it. Check it out. All right. For more information about videos, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week.
What we're looking forward to.
We're off 16. Next week. We're off next week.
What?
We're off for the next 2 weeks.
We're looking forward to being off the next 2 weeks.
We're going to read, watch, and listen to everything that should have been on our year-end best list. And we will be back January 6th to tell you what we're most looking forward to in 2016.
I can't believe you watched that. Old school. Pull it back.
What the?
Get that back.
It's old school, man.
Should we bring that back?
You should chop and screw it with the Tickle My Fancy song. That'd be creepy.
You could really be...
I can't hate
it. That'd be really cool if I did that and Adam sued me. And then Andrew sued me.
Yeah.
And, like, for years I've been like, we need to put a creative license, Creative Commons... tag on the stuff we do for our podcast, for the library of website, you know, all our stuff that's on there. Mm. And like the web team just ignores me. And then after, like, I get sued by two library employees, be like, see, I told you.
Like, I'm not paying that. I told you.
I'm sure there probably is some kind of metro policy somewhere that it's like, if you build a metro sign, it's ours.
Yeah.
And this podcast is a sign. Now, this is its adopts in it.
Well, I also had read that there were certain, before you settle on this final cast, too, that there were names like Tina Fey, names like Michael Caine that were out there. How is it that we came up with this final grouping?
Well, it took me a long time to get this movie made because when I finished the screenplay, it was really at the height of Spider-Man, Iron Man, every kind of movie that ends in the word man. And, here's all I can tell you. I got the right people in the movie.